Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Elaine B. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Massachusetts. Today is May 20th, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book. We're in the chapter of Vision for You. We're on page 157, and we'll be reading and commenting on paragraph 5, which begins with the man in the bed. Today's readers are Santa H. for the 12 steps, Martha M. for the 12 traditions, Penny L.C., Eileen M., and Leslie M. Our newcomer greeter for today is Kara L. She'll also get the number for available sponsors. And after that, Robin P. will close out our meeting with some important announcements for you. The reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that would be for May 19th, is 14649. That's 14,649. And the reference number for this morning's 7 a.m. meeting for Wednesday, May 20th, is 14657. That's 14,657. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Sonda H. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning, my fellows. And my name is Sonda H. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater living in dissolution one day at a time. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message out to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And everyone have a marvelous day, and I pass.
Thank you so much. You too, Santa H. And I'll now ask Martha M. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, Elaine. This is Martha M., recovered anorexic, bulimic, and compulsive overeater from Connecticut. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I want to thank you, Elaine, for your trusted service. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Martha M. Appreciate yours, too. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, and then we stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted using star 1, please. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter of Vision for You. We're on page 157, and we're going to read and comment on paragraph 5. And I will now ask Penny L.C. to please begin reading.
Good morning, Elaine. Thank you for your service, and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. The man in the bed was told of the acute poisoning from which he suffered, how it deteriorates the body of an alcoholic and warps his mind. There was much talk about the mental state preceding the first drink. So we know that we're talking about Bill W. and Dr. Bob being at the bedside of alcoholic number 3, Bill Dobson, and they are presenting to him the information that they have come to understand about their disease, and that to offer it to this yet suffering patient in the bed. And explaining about the same concepts that we have read in the doctor's opinion. You know, the acute poisoning, the allergy of the body that when we ingest certain foods, we just create that cycle of needing more and needing more. But the allergy and that insistence upon having that substance just creates this, then that the warps the mind, the mental obsession. I can't get enough. I have to stop, but I can't, but I want more. And all of that physical and mental turmoil that goes on within us. But the poisoning, to think of that, you know, to think of how if I were to take some type of a chemical into my body that would poison me, like a insecticide, for example, and how sick that would make me. And yet, what am I doing if I'm doing the same thing with foods that I know are poisoning me? And I can't, you know, perhaps can't see it, and it's very slow and progressive, but nonetheless, it's happening. So this patient is able to be offered this understanding that these two other recovered addicts understand about our disease. And it's offered to him the same way it's been offered to us. We have a choice. We can go on as we've been, or we can choose entire abstinence to be able to put down those poisoning foods for each of us, whatever they are and whatever food behaviors there are, to be able to help the body restore instead of deteriorate, help the mind become refreshed, to be able to see things differently and process differently, to be able to not need to resort to that first compulsive bite, to be free of the addiction. That's what this man is being promised, and so are we. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Penny LC. Appreciate that. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. If you'd like to comment on the fifth paragraph on page 157, please press star 1 to unmute and let me know.
Irene B. Liz Roz.
Bruce E.
Arlene M.
Bruce.
Debbie E.
Shannon O.
Okay, I've got more than I can take right for this lineup.
Shannon
I'm sorry.
O.
I heard Irene B. And I believe I heard a Liz. I know I got Roz G.
Oh, wow.
Bruce E, Eileen M, and Santa H. Did I hear a Liz?
Robin P.
Yes, it's Liz S, as in Sam.
Liz S. Okay. I'm going to take another lineup. I heard some other names. I'm sorry, I'm not able to fit everybody in right now, but we'll take another lineup. And okay, so I've got Irene B, Liz S, Roz G, Bruce E, Eileen M, and Santa H. Please go ahead, Irene. And you'll be followed by Liz S. Irene B? Star 1 to unmute.
Oh, goodness. Okay, there I am. Good morning. I'm Irene B., gratefully recovering bulimic from Baton Rouge. Thank you so much for your service. I love this paragraph because it highlights my situation at the bulimic. I love that it says the state of mind prior to taking the first drink. So I'm not going to talk about the allergy of the body because that's been handled. It's the state of mind. As a bulimic, in therapy, they would say, what were you thinking or what were you feeling prior to binging? I had no idea. All I knew is that I needed to eat, and I needed to eat now. What I thought or felt or what was going on, no idea, none. All I knew is I had to eat. So for me, I'm so thankful that the book did not say what did he think prior to eating, because I thought nothing, I processed nothing, and I saw nothing. All I did was feel the compulsion to eat like my life depended on it. There was no thinking. It was feeling. It was totally feeling. Whatever thinking was behind that feeling, I have no idea. All I knew is that I had to eat now and purge and eat again and purge and purge and eat and purge. It was horrible. Why did you do that? I have no idea. Well, in the book, it says it's the thinking. And so, well, I was thinking nothing. All I was doing was feeling. Well, in therapy, they taught me that behind every emotion, there is thinking. I said, but I'm not thinking. Well, you are thinking. You're just not aware of it. It's your internal self-talk. And then we went into cognitive distortion. So I was engaging in cognitive distortions in every bit of my thinking, and I had zero awareness of it, zero, but it was happening. And all I knew was to eat and eat more and purge and eat and purge and eat and purge. That's all I knew how to do. And by the grace of God, I came across this 12-step program that has gotten me closer to my higher power in a way that now I have the power to think before I act. And because I hear I forget everything because I'm so disconnected from self. I forget
just a reminder.
What it was like. Okay, I have to say this. I forget what it was like to be bulimic, to be in the eating disorder. So I'm thankful that I hear it here every day, because when I think of eating, I think I recall it from the flame, because you guys are reminding me of the hell that my life was, and it's not anymore, and I passed, and I thank you for the time.
Thank you, Irene B. Liz F., you are up next, and you'll be followed by Roz G.
Oh, I've just lost my place. And I'm going to get right back to it. Hi, I'm Liz S., a recovered compulsive reader from New Hampshire. I think that what really stands out for me in this paragraph is the language. You know, the poisoning, suffered, deteriorates, warps. These are all of the things that happen when I decide that I'm going to take that first bite. And I was just looking back at more about alcohol, as in when Bill says, we will tell you about the thinking that precedes a relapse. So there really is thinking or thought that goes into it. And, you know, I was very moved by this paragraph, because what I realize now is that for me, when I binged or ate the foods that were very harmful for me, was a tremendous amount of sadness. There wasn't a lot of thought that went into it beforehand. But the emotions that followed was a lot of sadness, because ultimately I didn't want to go there. But because I have this disease and because I wasn't living in the solution, I did. And the other thing that I often hear is that people want to, you know, get abstinent by going through the steps. And I think to myself, you know, I can't tell anyone that they're right or wrong. I will never do that. But if I were eating and trying to do any of the steps, it's impossible. Because the only thing that matters to me, if I'm in my illness and, you know, wanting to get the next bite, the next bite, the next bite, that's all that matters. That's it. That is the only thing that I care about. And for today, the only thing I care about is staying alive. Absolutely staying alive and aware and working the steps and moving forward. It frightens me to think what will happen if I don't. So this paragraph has a great deal of meaning for me, because I don't want my mind to be warped, and I don't want to put poison in my body. And with that, I will pass and thank you very much, everyone who's a part of making this meeting possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Liz S. Roz G., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Bruce E. Please go ahead, Roz.
Good. Thank you. Good morning, Elaine. Good morning, everybody. I'm Roz G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. I've been abstinent clean since July 2019, coming up on a year soon, after 15 or so years of off and on relapses, being a chronic relapser. So I'd like to take a look this morning for me at the part about the acute poisoning of which he suffered and how it deteriorates the body and what some foods did for me. Okay. So I have a recurring prescription it's called famotidine, and it's like Zantac, okay? And I would have to get that thing refilled regularly because of the heartburn that spaghetti, pasta, ravioli, those foods caused me, the acid, okay? And I remember a long time ago, a sponsor said to me, maybe that food doesn't work for you. But you know what? I didn't hear that. And I don't eat spaghetti today, but you know, I don't, and I haven't had to take a heartburn pill in months. I don't remember. Maybe I took one. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I don't need to take those pills anymore because the foods I'm eating aren't giving me heartburn. That was one of the deteriorating things that a certain food did for me. And another one was anything Frito-Lay that comes out of a Frito-Lay bag. They're so laden with salt that the left side of my tongue would swell. And another sponsor said to me, you know, I think your body's telling you that you're allergic to that. But, of course, it took me to have to go through a lot of pain to be able to say, to give that up. So if I see the words Frito-Lay, I don't eat it. And you know what? My tongue hasn't swollen up since I haven't eaten that food. And then there was other foods that I needed to use laxatives for because I got constipated from shoving them in my body so much. Sorry for the too much information. But this is poisoning. This is suffering. This is deterioration. So, yeah, a lot of people share it, and I love to share about the mind of what happens preceding that first bite. But I was thinking about what those foods did to me, how I haven't had digestion issues since my newly abstinence, the deepening spiritual experience I'm having since July. I haven't had to use heartburn pills or ask for a prescription. And my spiritual experience is deepening by the day. So I'm grateful. Yes, I will go ahead and pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Raj G. Bruce G., you're up next, followed by Eileen M. Please go ahead, Bruce.
Well, thank you. Just changed my name from Bruce E. and recovered in Southern Florida to Mr. Anti-Acid. I took so much anti-acid, man. You can call me Mr. Anti-Acid. So that must be a tremendously huge industry that supplies those of us that have used too much of that, ingested too much of that material into our lives to cause us to need that stuff. I have used a lot of it. Don't have to now. I'm very happy, very grateful to be on this call and say that I'm pretty healthy. What's the mental state preceding the first drink? You know, what is that mental state? Well, I think for me it was developed in my childhood. You know, the mental, I was an addict waiting to happen. You know, all I had to do was ingest the substance, and that completed the addiction. You know, I had half the addiction already. I had the mental state, you know. Now all I had to do is you put the substance together with it. So two things came together. Mental state came together with the substance, and now I'm an addict. And now I can't get out of it except for help from you guys and power greater than myself. The poisoning from which he suffered, how it deteriorates the body of an alcoholic and warps the mind. I poisoned my body with sugar and fat and all of that stuff. And there had to be some way to reverse it. The only way to reverse it was 12 steps. You know, so it was a physical problem and a mental problem. And it had to be reversed with a spiritual solution. So I'm driving up. I'm driving down from North Carolina about 2 years ago. And I had the mental state. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm driving from North Carolina to Florida. Man, what can I do on the way? I'm setting myself up for a binge. You know, I'm thinking, I can drink coffee because I'm going to be driving all that distance and I need to keep awake and I need that caffeine. And then I'm thinking, well, I have real dark coffee, you know, the real strong stuff. And then I'm thinking, well, I have cappuccino. And I'm thinking, well, what size? I'll just have a small one with some coffee. And I end up going into place and getting a 20, like the biggest they had, 18 or 24 ounce cappuccino, put tons of Splenda in it. Thank you. And all the other stuff that went with it. Ended up drinking 2.5 of those until I finally pulled the car over and dumped it out beside the road. So, you know, that's the mental state and the physical racking of the body. So I, with that, thank you. And I pass.
Thank you, Brucey. Thanks so much. Eileen M., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Fonta H.
Good morning. This is Eileen M., a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. And, yeah, I'm looking at that sentence, acute poisoning. And I'm thinking of that acute poisoning of the mind. Because for me, you know, when my thoughts were just focused on getting the next bite, that was my obsession. And it just literally took over my brain. And you know, in the process, it hurt all of my relationships. And, you know, relationships, you know, specifically like work, family, you know, friends, boyfriends, supervisors, et cetera. And it just, everybody who came in contact with me was affected by this. And, you know, the origin of this mental obsession, I didn't really know what it was. And, you know, I learned in the program that it's caused, you know, it's sort of that underlying thing that comes from the unaddressed disturbances. You know, in some cases, I did not know that I even had disturbances. You know, I was unaware of them. And then, at times when I was aware that I was resentful, I didn't really know it was resentment, but I would call other people in the program and I would kind of complain about the people in my life that were not doing what I wanted them to do. You know, instead of, you know, addressing them in a healthier manner using the step work, because, you know, at that time I had no tools, really, had no solution to handle these disturbances until I came into these rooms, you know, this vision line. 4 years ago, I started studying the big book. You know, I found someone in whom the problem had been solved, started studying the big book as a different approach because I just wasn't getting it. And, you know, I'm just, it's amazing. You know, I've been abstinent 4 years entirely and back to back. And that is such a miracle that, you know, I do not have food obsession. I don't have food thoughts. And, you know, the reason is because, you know, I know why, because I took the action that's outlined in the book. And, you know, the spiritual awakening was, it's not something that I did. It happened to me as a result of taking action. And what that spiritual awakening has done for me, you know, as well as what the constant application of step 10, 11, and 12 does for me is it takes away the thought that precedes the first compulsive bite. You know, when that's removed, then I can be of real use to other people because I'm available. And the clarity that comes with entire abstinence is incredible. And, you know, in the first couple of weeks, I remember I couldn't believe the clarity, really. It was like, you know, I started like using vocabulary words that I didn't even know that I knew them. It was just so amazing. And, you know, I have to address these disturbances every single day, you know, as they come up. And as they come up, you know, I've got to do that. And it's just daily action. And I'm really grateful. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And before we hear from Santa H., I'll just remind you where we are. We're on page 157 of the chapter, A Vision for You. And we're reading and commenting on paragraph 5, which begins with the man in the bed. So please go ahead, Santa H., and after you, we'll take off another lineup. Please go ahead, Santa.
Thank you, Elaine. Thank you for hearing me. Good morning, my family. This is Santa H. I'm a compulsive overeater living in a solution one day at a time, calling in from Montclair, New Jersey. And I just want to say thank you to everyone that makes this meeting possible and those who are giving service today. And thank you for all of you that are on the line. What I wanted to focus on in this paragraph is that he is at step one here. And I just love how this entire chapter is demonstrating the chapter on working with others. And they're going through the process just like it is. And I thought that was quite interesting. On the previous page where it says in the big book, and I'm just going to read some blurbs out of here. When we discovered we had a prospect, we found out all they can about him. And that's what they did on the previous page. They got an idea of his behavior, problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, and religious leanings. And then also what they did next was, they put him in a private room there. They waited until the end of a spree, a lucid interval. So for him, what they did was that they waited until he was free from the alcohol so that they were able to share with them whatever they were sharing with them at that moment. And so as they go on, they ask him if he wanted to quit for good, and they draw this attention to the person who was recovered. And to go on, they waited to the end of the next drinking bout is what they did. And so what they're doing here is that they're telling him about their drinking experience, their symptoms, and encouraging him to speak up himself. It's what they probably did more in the previous paragraph, still on step one, talking about the first four books, including the doctor's opinion. And then it says, they tell him how baffled we were and finally learned that you were sick, and give him account of the struggles that made them stop. And so right now they're just talking about their own experiences here, not even talking about the spiritual experience yet. And then he goes on down here and says, I know my time is wrapping up here. They didn't brand him. They continue to talk about the illness and fatal maladies and talked about the conditions of the body and mind accompanying it and kept it and keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. And that is where we are at right now. In the next paragraph, not jumping to ahead, but just to say that the next paragraph, we talk about the disease, continuing with step one. And it's not until we get to paragraph 7 is when they bring up the spiritual experience, the spiritual aspect of this disease. I just thought that was quite interesting. I wanted to share with all of you my thoughts around that. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Santa H. Okay. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. Who'd like to comment on this fifth paragraph on page 157?
Michelle F.
I heard Michelle and Grace H.
Shannon.
Deb E.
Shannon
from the UK.
Shannon O.
Someone from the UK. I got Shannon O. And who is that from?
From the UK.
One more time with the from the UK.
Mary Grace.
It's Claire E.
Claire E. I have Mary Grace. Sorry, I just got the Grace part. Mary Grace.
Deb E.
Deb E. And one more.
Okay, I've got Michelle. I need the first initial of your last name. Mary Grace, same for you. Shannon O. Claire from the UK, need your initial also. Deb E. And I have room for one more. Anybody else want to share? Okay. Well, let's go with this, and then we'll see if we have time for one more afterwards. So, Michelle, if I could have the first initial of your last name, and then you'll be followed by Mary Grace.
It's F as in Foxtrot. Thank you, Leah, for your service.
Please go ahead.
What really stands out to me, what convinced me, was my own personal experience with the poisoning of the body and the allergy, is that I actually got tested for allergies early in my recovery, and a lot of the things I binged on, I'm actually bodily allergic to. My very first binge was a thing of mint-flavored ice cream, and I noticed I had a tendency to pick things that were mint-flavored. Well, lo and behold, I'm allergic to mint. So, you know, it's like the body sets up that craving. If you never ate that whatever, your body wouldn't want it. And, you know, before I went for the allergy testing, I was having a problem with nuts and being able to eat those in a rational fashion. And lo and behold, I'm allergic to nuts, not just some, but all, peanuts and tree nuts. And so if that doesn't convince you, nothing will, you know. It really is a poison. And I used to have really terrible skin condition, and that was not being successfully treated by a dermatologist, and it was an allergic reaction to what I was putting into my body. And I certainly had much more roller coaster emotions when I was in the food and when I was first getting abstinent. And it was amazing how mellow things got, and how clear, literally clear vision-wise, things got once that stuff was out of my system. And it's like night and day. You know, why would you go back to a black and white life when you're living in Technicolor? It's, you know, once you look at it that way and you really realize that it is poison, I hope that helps convince people to put their substances down. It certainly did for me. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michelle F. Mary Grace, may I have the first initial of your last name before you share, and you'll be followed by Shannon D.
I'm Mary Grace, H as in Harry.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Okay, Mary Grace from a compulsive overeater from California. So while everybody was talking, I went out. I have a medical journal that I keep. And here are some of the things on it. Not everything. Rosacea. Gastroreflux disease, which some of us have talked about. Chronic pain. Irritable bowel syndrome. Hyperlipidemia, which is high cholesterol, chronic low back pain, and one of our very favorites, I'm sure, obesity. Well, this was on January 2020. Not to tell you, the obesity had been taken off because I'd already lost a lot of weight, but I had to point that out to the doctor. I mean, they don't just automatically take stuff off. And so he was like, well, I don't know, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I had my nutritionist call him, and they came up with a weight range, and the obesity came off of my chart, which is, of course, I love that. Now, some of these things are probably not going to go away, but I can tell you that the rosacea is very non-problematic. As I've heard other people say, the GERD is not problematic. The irritable bowel syndrome is all but gone. My cholesterol is normal. I will probably always have the pain because it's caused by things other than being 80 pounds overweight, which is my highest weight. And so, yes, I think it's so important that we share with people the physical aspects of this disease and the poisoning of the mind. As someone else said, you know, the spiritual recovery comes later. And as we've heard in prior paragraphs, there's sometimes a lot of resistance to that. But if I can share the physical aspects of my disease, I think I'm going to hook a newcomer more quickly. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary Grace H. Shannon O., you are up next, and you'll be followed by Claire in the UK. Please go ahead, Shannon O.
Thank you. My name is Shannon O. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. In this passage here, I'm looking at that these men are telling their story to this man in bed, and they are the only ones who can do this because they have the exact experience. And he's being told of acute poisoning from what she suffered now and how he's deteriorated. But what stood out to me was there was much talk about the mental state during this identification, all of these men identifying. And during the mental state, and I hope they talked about this, the mental state for me is so easily identifiable because there is no peace of mind. And when I heard the gentleman speak, it was one idea of advancing towards this end goal towards another. And it's the head talking constantly about where we're going with this thing and how we're going to get there, and one more idea and one more idea. And the mental state is, for me, just never out of ideas, never. And there is no peace of mind with the mental state. And of course, it always precedes the first drink. And for me as a compulsive overeater, that bite. And being in bed is a place where that's a serious place for me, because that is oftentimes where I am vulnerable. So it may be at night when I go to bed. But for today, it has been lifted. But I remember just those days where there was just no peace of mind. And and the warping, just the absolute warping.
Gentle reminder.
And I am done. Thank you so much for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you very much, Shannon O. Claire in the UK, may I please have the first initial of your last name before you share?
My name's Claire E. That's my initial.
Claire E. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. My name's Claire E. I'm a recovered compulsive eater in the UK. Thank you so much for everyone who's doing service on this meeting. I don't usually make the 10 a.m., but I'm struggling to do my usual 7 a.m. meeting because my children are at home. So it's good to be here today and to hear that paragraph. And acute poisoning. I remember quite early on in my overeating, my mum used to say to me, when you eat, actually, I don't think she identified it as sugar, I did, but she said, when you eat, you become glazed, you're glazed. And I was also told by a colleague once that I had mad, starry eyes when I ate. And there was something that almost came down upon me when I was eating particularly sugar. And it's like a big glass screen between me and the world. There's already been shared, you know, the other toxic effects of what I ate physically. You know, I suffered. It says, you know, the acute poisoning from which you suffered. I suffered physically from what I did to myself, which was, you know, violent. I wouldn't do that to other people. My sort of behaviour of choice was bulimia, and the things I did around the food were appalling sometimes. And it goes on to talk, I mean, this paragraph's kind of got the lot, hasn't it? So the physical allergy, then the sort of deterioration, the progressive nature of this disease, the body of the alcoholic, it deteriorated, it got worse. You know, my teeth started crumbling. My seemed a bit, you know, I couldn't sleep at night because of the heartburn. And then the warped mind, and that was also progressive, you know, and it really reminds me of that bit in the doctor's opinion when it talks about the, to the alcoholic, they can't after a time differentiate the truth from the false. You know, there was a line in the sand and I crossed it, and then I crossed it again, and then the line in the sand, I couldn't even see the line in the sand anymore. It was a new line in the sand. My mind became more and more warped when it came to food. And one of the things I did, and this is the next sentence really that really reminds me, is when I came in and got abstinent in a couple of years ago, I had to do a lot of work about, you know, the well-known stages of a spree, as it talks about in the doctor's opinion. So, you know, the mental state preceding the first drink, you know, and for me that was the irritability, the restlessness, the discontent, the untreated illness, all of those things, which meant that for me, you know, the food was a step up. I needed the food. I needed the effect of the food to medicate my feelings. And the mental state was basically getting myself into a state where I believed that food was the solution every single time. And, you know, sort of is big, beating my head on with a hammer to get rid of the headache. You know, it's going to the hairdresser to buy a TV. My mental state always told me that food was the solution. And the reason it did is because the problem I have centers in my mind. And the only solution I have for that is a spiritual defense. You know, it talks about, you know, I used to think, and I've heard Kim G say this once, you know, step one was don't eat, don't eat, don't eat. And I've learned that step one is I am absolutely going to eat unless I can take the steps and have a spiritual answer to this illness. And that's me. Thank you. With that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Claire M. And Deb E., you will be our last share for today. And so please go ahead. Deb E., star one to unmute.
Hi. I'm Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Sorry, I thought there was someone before me. Thank you so much. I'm glad you heard my name today. So what stood out to me in this paragraph is this part, warps his mind, made me think of the food fog of when I was in the food. My actions were different when I was under the influence of compulsive overeating. I just didn't think the same. And that can still happen today if I let my character defects go unchecked. You know, if I allow my ego to take over, it warps my thinking. If I'm in pride and ego and self-righteousness, I don't think or act the same way as when I'm just thinking of being in how I can be in service and being tolerant. And the mental state preceding the first drink, that reminds me of the utter defeat of when that, like, feeling like, oh, I just don't care anymore. I just want to eat. I'll start tomorrow. I don't want to, it's too much. I can't put down the food. I've got to, like, I just have to eat now. You know, that, like, that intense feeling that would overtake me. That I almost don't remember anymore at this point, but I need to remember it because I only get a daily reprieve from this. And as I was hearing other people talk about the poisoning, I was thinking about how that really applies to me too. You know, I have an autoimmune disease and I need to follow a certain specific diet, which thankfully works really well with my abstinence. But my body just reacts like there's, you know, there are certain foods that are like poison that if I eat them, it triggers my body into an unnatural response. I think that's all I had to share for today. Thank you so much. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Deb E. And thank you to everybody who has come on the line and shared your experience, strength, and hope. We will now transition the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Eileen M. please read A Vision for You? Star 1 to unmute Eileen. Eileen? We're not hearing you, Eileen, if you're there. I think I hear you now. Sure, that'd be great, Melanie C. Please go ahead.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly dispose more to you and... Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you